Heading into Labor Day, the Labor Department reports that employers added just 235,000 jobs in August. That is a fraction of what many economists expected. President Biden spoke about this at the White House this morning.
There's no question the Delta variant is why today's job report isn't stronger. I know people were looking, and I was hoping for a higher number.
The president is now visiting storm-ravaged Louisiana, which bore the brunt of Hurricane Ida. And for more on all of the important stories that happened this week, let's bring in our Friday Politics Roundtable. With us is Margaret Tolov. She's managing editor at Axios. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Tanya. Great to be with you.
Yes, good to have you. And Darlene Superville is a White House reporter for the Associated Press. Welcome, Darlene.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, you know, at least 60 people died in Hurricane Ida, and FEMA warns that it could actually be weeks before power is restored to parts of Louisiana. What are some of the challenges the president will have to answer to today during his visit to some of those communities that have been hardest hit? I'll start with you, Darlene.
Thank you. Some of the challenges are just a lot of the people down in Louisiana, for example, don't have electricity, and they're forecast to be without electricity for weeks to come. So that will be a big question on the minds of some of the affected people that he may interact with while he's there on the ground, and also from the local officials that he'll be meeting with. There are also issues of water. I know a lot of communities there were without water for some time, how soon that can be restored. And you know, Mother Nature certainly has given the president a lot of imagery these past couple of weeks to support his argument that climate change is real, that it's here, that it's dangerous. I mean, we're seeing the effects these past couple of weeks, and that it needs to be addressed. So those are some of the things that'll be top of mind for the president.
Margaret, yeah, you know, I just want to bring you in here.
Yes. I was going to say, I'm struck by how the images of Louisiana and the hurricane damage present potentially a different and alternative narrative to the images of devastation in Afghanistan and the implications of the withdrawal. I think every tragedy or disaster is also an opportunity for a president. And look, the measuring stick against which all modern presidents are judged from hurricanes is, of course, Hurricane Katrina in the Bush administration. If President Biden can show that his administration, his FEMA team, have a competent management and handling of this storm, it presents an opportunity for him to portray a success, an ability to, you know, arrange something difficult and carry it out. And it takes attention away from what has been hammering the most in recent days, which is his execution, his team's execution of the withdrawal in Afghanistan. On the other hand, if people in the Gulf region are without power and services, if there's real devastation, if there's a failure of the federal government, then that sort of becomes a pylon of challenges for President Biden.
Now, Darlene, part of the Biden's assumed response to this is to invest trillions in climate resilience, along with education and health, in his $3.5 trillion budget plan on Capitol Hill. But now we have Senator Joe Manchin, middle-of-the-road Democrat from West Virginia, who now suggests he wants to hit pause. This might be too pricey. Is this budget in jeopardy?
Well, Senator Manchin has been sounding those alarms for some time, right? He's out today with an opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal where he's calling for a pause. But he's called for that already. And one of the things that I think is notable is that although he says that he will not vote for the $3.5 trillion human infrastructure package that the president wants, child care, home health care, things to help women get back into the workforce, and money for climate change, for example, Senator Manchin did not say that he would not vote for a smaller, a smaller number package, $2 trillion, $1 trillion, whatever the case may be. Now, the White House has not also, and on the other hand, the White House has also not said that $3.5 trillion is a red line for the president. So there seems to be some room possibly for negotiating over that number. And there would have to be, because Senator Manchin's vote is so central to getting anything passed, President Biden getting anything passed in the Senate.
And Margaret, let me, I guess, put this to you. Joe Biden was in the Senate for a long time before he was in the White House. If he can't get this budget through, what does this tell us about, you know, how well he can work Capitol Hill?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Scott, I think for weeks now, everybody on the Hill has said $3.5 trillion is aspirational and nobody really thinks it's going to be that high. What Joe Manchin has done is make that conversation much more official and public, and it represents a turning point in the negotiations. If the entire infrastructure deal falls apart, including that $1.2 trillion compromise that already passed the Senate, it's a huge problem for Joe Biden. And that's not just because it'll show that he can't work the Hill. It's because, like, what are Democrats supposed to run on in 2022? It was always going to be infrastructure, getting this years-long thing done, and the implications of infrastructure, which are a massive cash infusion into the economy. I mean, 20 years of war in Afghanistan and Iraq, estimated price tag on that a little over $2 trillion. So $3.5 trillion and even $1.2 trillion are massive amounts of money to pump into an economy in a relatively short period of time. This really comes back to where it's always been, which is, are progressives going to throw the baby out with the bathwater, or are they going to be willing to come down significantly from $3.5 trillion in order to save the $1.2 trillion bipartisan deal? And I think that's where we've been for weeks, but now it's official with Manchin weighing in.
Yeah. Let's get to the other big story this week. Texas enacted the toughest abortion restrictions in the country, and the U.S. Supreme Court did not stand in the way. Reporters actually asked President Biden about that strategy today, and he singled out a provision in the state law that actually enables anyone to sue a person who aids and abets a woman getting an abortion. Let's listen.
I was told that there are possibilities within the existing law to have the Justice Department look and see whether are there things that can be done that can limit the independent action of individuals in enforcing a federal system, a state law. I don't know enough to give you an answer yet. I've asked that to be checked.
Darlene, he's talking about this government approach to protect abortion access. Can Democrats do much else at this point?
It doesn't seem that they can do anything else, much else at this point. Yesterday, we saw House Speaker Pelosi come out with a statement where she, when the House comes back into session, she's going to move on legislation to codify Roe v. Wade, right, to make it federal law. She may be able to do that in the House and get it through the House, but the reality is that the Democrats do not have the votes over in the Senate to make that happen. So you're left with things like the president calling for a whole-of-government approach and basically asking the Justice Department, the White House Counsel's Office, and other pieces of his administration to kind of look around and see what they can do, what they maybe can do to help women in Texas who are facing this new stark reality, which is that they cannot get abortions that they need. But it just doesn't seem like there's much Democrats can do to block this law or to get it overturned in any way.
Yeah, I think the Democrats see this as a big campaign mobilization opportunity heading into the 2022 midterms. There are a lot of women voters, even Republican and independent women voters, for whom this is going to be a major issue. There are a lot of swing voters who they think will be really turned off by this particular element in the law that you were talking about, where like the Uber driver can be sued for driving the woman to the appointment. But the reality is that everybody who we talk to thinks that the Texas law or major chunks of it may well get thrown out in court, but that it's going to set a new new floor for the debate on this. There's another case moving through the pipeline out of Mississippi that could be the real test case that could move the timetable to 15 weeks, not 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. People talk about Roe v. Wade, but probably the more important landmark ruling is the Casey decision from 1992. But in any case, Democrats are left with the best case scenario now of being able to campaign and hope it can help them in 2022. The Supreme Court is what it is. Cases are moving through the process. And if this is the first look at what's to come, then look, no one's looking at abortion becoming legal and illegal in 50 states. But the fact of the matter is, like, more than half of the states are Republican controlled governors or legislatures. Mm-hmm. And in those states, if you're a woman seeking an abortion, your rights already are constrained and they are poised to be seriously constrained in the months and years to come.
Okay, and Darlene, let me just ask you quickly about House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. He warned that Republicans would not forget telecommunications companies that comply with the House Select Committee's investigating the January 6th riot on Capitol Hill. Let's listen to Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene on Fox News.
These telecommunications companies, if they go along with this, they will be shut down. And that's a promise.
So, Darlene, what do you make of all this and the strident tone from Kevin McCarthy?
Well, Kevin McCarthy is, he wants to be speaker. He's looking at potentially having his phone records subpoenaed and the select committee in the House sort of tracking the conversations he might have had with President Trump during the riot. And he doesn't want that to come out, basically, is what's going on there.
Darlene Superville and Margaret Taleb, thank you both for joining us for our Politics Roundtable today. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.